This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Today on AFCEA Answers, safeguarding the grid, the water, and more. The conversation starts right now. I'm Max Kakis with AFCEA International. Welcome to AFCEA Answers. Our guests today are Suzanne Spaulding, the Acting Undersecretary, National Protection and Programs Directorate with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and Jill Singer, a partner with Deepwater Point in McLean, Virginia, former Chief Information Officer with the National Reconnaissance Office. Jill and Suzanne, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us today. Now, critical infrastructure, we had a conversation about this the other day, and it's a big term that covers a lot of very everyday things that a lot of people take for granted, and it's probably just as well that they do take it for granted. The electrical grid, the water supply, and so on. We're talking about the National Infrastructure Protection Plan for 2013 that was just released recently. Suzanne, I want to give you an opportunity to give us the big picture of what the NIPP is all about.
Well, thank you, Max, and thanks for the opportunity to be here today. It's great to have this opportunity to have this conversation. This is a really important document for us and for the American public. The National Infrastructure Protection Plan for 2013, the subtitle is Partnering for Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience. And each of those words is really very important. You talked a little bit about what critical infrastructure is. It's when people hear infrastructure, they think first of roads and bridges. But as you pointed out, it's really all of those network systems and assets, whether physical or virtual, that underlie and sustain our ways of life, and that if disrupted would have a debilitating impact on national security, economic security, and public health and safety. So as I talk around the country about this, you know, to help people understand why this, how this impacts their everyday life, think of it when you wake up in the morning and you flip the switch, the electricity goes on. That's part of what we are all about, is making sure that that happens. When you go to brush your teeth, you turn the faucet, that water comes out. That when you go to work, that transportation infrastructure is there. When you arrive, the computer turns on. When you take your break at lunch and you want to do a little online shopping, that's a safe and secure financial sector in which for you to interact. So all of those things, there are 16 different sectors that we've organized into, these things that sustain our way of life. Partnering for critical infrastructure security and resilience is absolutely fundamental because the general consensus is that about 85% of that infrastructure is owned by the private sector. And so the government has a role to play, but so does the private sector. And this plan was developed very much in collaboration with those critical infrastructure owners and operators in the private sector and with our state and local territorial and tribal partners. And that was absolutely critical to coming out with a useful document. And then finally, security and resilience. Resilience is something that we are placing a great deal of emphasis on because it's very important that we try to prevent hazards and threats from disrupting our critical infrastructure. But some of those are inevitable, as we see with extreme weather events, Hurricane Sandy and the derecho, and in this recent polar vortex. And so we've got to be prepared to bounce back and to be resilient as well.
Sure. We're going to come back to you in a couple of moments, Suzanne, to talk about the development of the plan. But Jill, I wanted to ask you about the NIPP. You're one of the co-chairs of the AFCEA Cyber Committee, and that was how one of the ways that I came to know about the NIPP. And a lot of the emphasis of this plan is voluntary because, as Suzanne points out, the infrastructure that we're trying to protect here is not necessarily publicly owned. Some of it is municipally owned, but a good deal of it is privately owned. And I'm wondering, from an industry point of view, what kinds of considerations do we have when we're developing a plan where industry plays a very large part?
Great. Thanks, Max. And thanks for the opportunity to be here with you and with Suzanne. I think that industry looked very favorably upon this version of the NIPP because it was a collaborative and cooperative effort. Mm-hmm. It did DHS, did allow industry to have many opportunities to comment on best practices that it has seen, comment on things that have worked in private industry, as well as perhaps talk about things that were not as successful from a private company perspective. Mm-hmm. You're right, it is a public-private partnership because so much of the infrastructure is owned privately. But I do believe that all of the areas of critical infrastructure are supportive of ongoing collaboration with DHS to ensure that we are providing our nation with the resources that it needs and safe resources that it needs. And I will echo the resiliency comment that when something doesn't work as expected, that we can quickly get it back. I'll use the term online, but that might not be an electronic term. It may just be getting it back in working order. It's a hallmark. I think NIPP really is a hallmark of a few things that we've seen out of the federal government in the past couple of years mm-hmm. that are purposefully orchestrated to make sure that industry and government are locked hands and working closely together for the safety of the nation.
Mm-hmm. Suzanne, we have about a minute here, and I was wondering if you could give us some insights into the development of the plan. And I guess what I'm looking for is the short version of what were some of the things that you thought about when you were when you and your colleagues were pulling this together at DHS.
Thank you, Max. There were a couple of key things that you know this was produced at the direction of the president. Mm-hmm. He issued a presidential policy directive 21 on strengthening critical infrastructure security and resilience. And one of the things that he asked us to do in that was to update the SNIP. The same day that he issued that presidential policy directive, he also issued an executive order on cybersecurity.
Right.
With a whole series of deliverables there. And so that was not a coincidence. So one of the things that we knew right off the bat is that it was going to be very important to take a holistic approach across physical and cyber in this National Infrastructure Protection Plan, which we have done. Mm-hmm. The other piece, as I said, was that we knew that we could not develop a plan from on high in Washington and hand it over. This had to be a collaborative effort. There were over 1,100 participants involved in the process, over 50-plus engagements around the country, thousands of comments from the experts, the real experts out in the private sector and mm-hmm. in our state and local territorial tribe.
Okay. We'll follow up on that in just a few moments. Still to come, developing the voluntary approach to protecting critical infrastructure. You're listening to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio.
FCA has been the Association for Global Security since 1946. Experience FCA in action at its upcoming events. West 2014, focusing on the sea services, February 11th to 13th in San Diego. The Winter Intelligence Symposium, February 13th in Laurel, Maryland. Air Force ISR Industry Day, February 26th in Chantilly, Virginia. And the Homeland Security Conference, March 10th to 12th in Washington, D.C. Many of FCA's events offer continuing education to help you maintain professional certifications. Stay in the know with FCA's international journal, Signal Magazine. January's issue focuses on C4ISR, Defense Economics and Acquisition Solutions. Further your education by taking advantage of Carnegie Mellon's Software Engineering Institute's Step Forward Training Package. That includes 36 cybersecurity courses. Learn more and join today at afcea.org. That's afcea.org.
Welcome back to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio. I'm Max Kakis. Our guests today are Jill Singer, a partner with Deepwater Point in McLean, Virginia, and Suzanne Spaulding, the DHS Acting Undersecretary for National Protection and Programs Directorate. Now, Suzanne, you were telling us before the break about the considerations the president had in mandating the development of the NIPP. And one of the hallmarks that of the plan is that it was developed in large part by stakeholders and is primarily voluntary in the way that industry can help out here. Jill gave us some insights into it earlier from the industry side, and I wanted to get your thoughts about how NIPP is expected to reach its goals, given the fact that you've got the dual aspect of being very voluntary and also at the same time developed with a lot of input from stakeholders. Offer us some insight on that, please.
I think that's the only way we can achieve our goals, mm-hmm. Max. One of the things that we're going to do right off the bat is to sit down with these critical infrastructure owners and operators and make sure that we have developed joint priorities mm-hmm. and a plan of action going forward. We have to do this. The core of this has to be a voluntary program. Right. We face a very agile adversary with regard to mm-hmm. potential terrorist attacks, cyber events, and a very dynamic natural environment, of a changing risk environment, if you
right.
will. This is an exercise in risk management that we're undertaking. And the voluntary collaborative approach offers us, I think, at this point, the best hope for being agile and innovative and developing innovative approaches to managing that risk, where everyone brings their particular expertise and resources and capabilities to bear.
Mm-hmm. Jill, I wanted to ask you, obviously this has been a focus of the FCA Cyber Committee for some time. We had recently Sarah Mahmood from DHS S&T program, the RECX Replacement Transformer program that is also under Suzanne's tent. Over at DHS, and I'm kind of wondering, this is a situation where critical infrastructure touches so many different aspects here, and we have this voluntary program that was developed in very large part with industry. Is that a situation, or is that a way of thinking about this that works for industry, that helps our industry partners as well when we're looking at this?
Yes, it really is a great way to keep industry engaged and to make sure that industry's views are represented within products that come out from a federal perspective. I don't think that you would find that many members of the critical infrastructure industries who are anxious for lots more regulation from the federal government mm-hmm. and lots more very prescriptive how-tos in order to keep the infrastructure physically safe and virtually safe. So having it be voluntary is a great first start. I do also think that industry, in terms of proving the value of NIPP, will look to the federal government to continue to show examples of how it has been used. The plan and the framework from cybersecurity and other places have been used by federal agencies mm-hmm. to improve their own protection mechanisms. And those will be really helpful for industry to say, okay, I understand how you were able to use it. Now we too will be able to use it.
Right.
I think another view from industry is that it comes at a cost. Mm-hmm. And if you are, let's use your RECX and your transformer example of real physical infrastructure. In order for us to put a more resilient critical infrastructure in place in the electrical system and to replace transformers, that will take funds and takes increased resources to our utility companies. It'll be a long time before they've been able to achieve that goal and increase the rates enough to support that. And it will also be the American public's responsibility to understand that keeping the infrastructure safe across the entire grid will come potentially mm-hmm. at some cost to each and every one of us.
Now, a few months ago, Suzanne, we had as our guest on this program, Ken Gant from the Office of Biometric Identity Management, also at DHS. And again, it strikes me that critical infrastructure is just one of those topics where the term doesn't fairly describe the breadth of what we're doing here, because Ken Gant has a certain portions of what he does that touch on the critical infrastructure role as well. And is there any concern usually at DHS about whether this is too big a scope in terms of how the NIPP approaches the challenge? I don't even want to call it a problem, because it's clearly not a problem, but it is a challenge.
Right. It is a challenge, Max. Although one of the things that I should emphasize about this NIP 2013, Partnering for Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience, is that it really builds on the outstanding work of the previous versions mm-hmm. of the National Infrastructure Protection Plan.
Right.
And one of the things that early on folks in this field did is create an organizational institutional structure mm-hmm. of sectors, 16 different sectors today that help us get our arms around, as you say, the vast scope of this. And there are sector-specific agencies. DHS is the lead for a number of the sectors, but DOE is the lead for energy, for example. Mm-hmm. And DOT and TSA share the lead for transportation. So we are tapping expertise across the government, and again, across the private sector and throughout our state and local folks. And if we can continue to build institutions and ways to bring all that expertise together, we can solve this challenge.
Okay, very good. Well, still to come, NIPP, a yardstick for success. You're listening to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio.
FCA has been the association for global security since 1946. Experience FCA in action at its upcoming events. West 2014, focusing on the sea services, February 11th to 13th in San Diego. The Winter Intelligence Symposium, February 13th in Laurel, Maryland. Air Force ISR Industry Day, February 26th in Chantilly, Virginia. And the Homeland Security Conference, March 10th to 12th in Washington, D.C. Many of FCA's events offer continuing education to help you maintain professional certifications. Stay in the know with FCA's international journal, Signal Magazine. January's issue focuses on C4ISR, Defense Economics and Acquisition Solutions. Further your education by taking advantage of Carnegie Mellon's Software Engineering Institute's Step Forward Training Package that includes 36 cybersecurity courses. Learn more and join today at afcea.org. That's afcea.org.
Welcome back to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio. Our guests today are Suzanne Spaulding, the DHS Acting Undersecretary for the National Protection and Programs Directorate, and Jill Singer, partner with Deepwater Point in McLean, Virginia. Suzanne, I wanted to ask you sort of the easiest question and the hardest question. In terms of measuring success for NIPP, how are you going to measure success for something that is this deep and this broad in scope for this particular program?
Max, it's a great question. Metrics always are one of the hardest things that we do in government, and I expect in the private sector as well. One of the key indicators of whether we are succeeding in implementing this NIP will be our ability to sustain the engagement of our stakeholders, mm-hmm. of our private sector, critical infrastructure owners and operators, of our local officials, and the other elements of the private sector that need to bring their expertise to bear to solve these challenges.
Right.
So that's certainly one of them. And what I will be looking for as we go forward here in implementing the NIP is how we're doing on implementing the call to action. At the end of the NIP, we have a very specific set of items that we want to carry out and implement, mm-hmm. and that is our call to action. Mm. And so that gives us a pretty good checklist. It talks about building upon those partnership efforts. That will be absolutely essential through that priority setting and building capacity at the local level, innovating in managing risk, and then focusing on outcomes and learning so that we can, again, put that back in and do these things smarter as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. Jill, when it comes to measuring success for a program like the NIPP, obviously you have your previous experience in government. What was it, about 20 years or so, with a variety of agencies? And in particular, Suzanne was saying that the call for action to industry, to industry partners, was an important part of how you measured that kind of success. Does that sound entirely plausible to you in terms of how you would use that as a yardstick for the success of a program?
Well, Max, I fully support what Suzanne described as her first outcome here, which is a continued engagement with mm-hmm. industry and a willingness for industry to keep talking with the federal government about how to protect our infrastructure.
Sure.
And I think as long as we see that, and I have no reason to believe that industry is done talking with the federal government, then I believe we have the opportunity for great success across the critical infrastructure. I spent a fair amount of my time either as a government employee or as a consultant working with members of the 16 various critical infrastructure mm-hmm. Activities, whether they're telecom or energy or healthcare and so forth. And CIO to CIO, predominantly, they all understand that they have a serious responsibility to the United States for making sure that their environments are both physically safe and safe in a virtual manner and a cyber manner. And I don't see that changing. I mean, I think that everyone, the recognition that we need to keep this conversation going is very high within the country right now. I actually don't see that changing. And I actually, in an unusual way, I see what happened in West Virginia, which we will call a man-made event and not a natural disaster event. But that was amazingly unfortunate for the folks in West Virginia. However, it does remind all of us that we have to be particularly sensitive. Suzanne mentioned in the beginning that an American should be able to turn on the tap and expect good, clean water. That's just part of the infrastructure. Right. Well, that didn't happen there. And I think that serves as a good example for how we keep industry and government consistently talking and consistently working toward the same goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, Suzanne, as we wrap up our conversation here, I wanted to know, and I had a chance to digest the NIPP over the weekend. Nice reading on a cold weekend here in Washington.
Good for you.
I was wondering what your thoughts are looking ahead on other areas and other topics that you that might be explored in future editions of the NIPP. Obviously, keeping in mind that you know within a certain within a certain plan or within a certain program that you have, you can do this much and maybe. Not that much more, but are there any other ideas or are there any other areas or topics that you'd like to pursue in future versions of the NIPP in terms of what other things, what other good things you'd like to see taken care of and done?
Max, I think one of the key things, as I said earlier, is going to be for us to continue to learn.
Mm-hmm.
This is still a relatively new kind of relationship between the government and the private sector to accomplish a national security objective. And so we still have a lot to learn about how to maximize the benefits that can come from that relationship. I cannot emphasize enough how grateful I am for the commitment of the private sector to this process and the development of this plan. There was intense involvement and a lot of hard work. And so I know that they share our commitment and our goal. But we still can develop, and I hope we will continue to develop, as I say, more innovative ways, processes, institutions, tools, networks that allow us to each come to the to this challenge, bringing our comparative advantages and leveraging those in a very agile way as the environment around us changes and our adversaries change. And that's what I would love to see, that, and that holistic approach between the physical and the virtual, which I think increasingly we need to do, bringing the CS, the Chief Information Security Officer and the Chief Security Officer together to think about the security and resilience of critical infrastructure.
All right, very good. Well, we'll look forward to inviting you back for another edition of the show and perhaps getting an update on the next version of the NIPP. Our special thanks to the FCS Cyber Committee for production help with today's show. Got a question about what we've discussed today? Got an answer. The conversation continues on our blog at federalnewsradio.com. Search FCEA, that's A-F-C-E-A. That's also where you can download this program and our previous shows for listening on your schedule. This program is a production of FCEA International, which is solely responsible for its content. On the web at FCEA.org. I'm Max Kakis. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for FCEA Answers on Federal News Radio.